the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Delighted to have a voice you would have heard many times on The Last Word in the past. Many occasions when he sat here in this chair presenting the programme when I was away. You see him on television all the time, on Virgin Media Television, and you also listen to his podcast. Gavin Riley, political correspondent of Virgin Media Television, is back with us.
Good to be back.
Great to see you, Gavin.
Thanks for having me.
Second book, you have written The Secret Life of Leinster House. So is this all about the heavy drinking, the drug taking, the affairs, the bonga bonga parties?
Not so much the bonga bonga parties. There's a small oblique reference to the either the affairs or the marital breakdowns, but that's largely because actually the job of politicians can be so intense and so time consuming that often their relationships just wither on the vine and die because they're never at home and they don't have the family relationships that many people
might. I think
that's
an important point. I think that comes out in the book, that the workload and the time away from home.
Mm.
Okay, even if you're not getting into details of individuals who may have strayed, there must be temptation there. Like there can be in many workplaces.
Yeah, but the one thing that I was very struck by when I was putting it together was the tension between the Dubliners, or those who are from the greater Dublin region and who could commute to work every day, who would love nothing more than for it to be traditional office hours. If the Dáil sat from 10 until 5, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, they'd be delighted. Their evenings could be their own, their weekends could be their own, they're fine. But that doesn't work because of the rural TDs who can't possibly commute up to Dublin every day, so who have organised the Dáil Week to be lunchtime on a Tuesday, all day Wednesday, and then right up until late afternoon on a Thursday, effectively trying to cram 5 working days into 2.5 days of sitting time. And there's this permanent tension then between those who want to try and properly make the maximum use of the limited time that they want to be in Dublin, because they want to be at home, they want to be in their constituencies, they want to be in their constituency offices, they want their voters to see them. And the Dubliners, who hate the idea that there is no Dáil on a Monday and none on the Friday, but that they have to sit in until stupid o'clock on a Tuesday and a Wednesday and sometimes on a Thursday. And there's the permanent sort of difficulty of how you try to square all of that. But it does have the consequence that the rural ones are away from home 2 or 3 nights a week. And the Dubliners, even when they're ostensibly at home and they have the same domestic demands of trying to be Dubliners and be parents, don't get to be it because they're in work till all hours.
Yeah, but isn't the thing with many TDs as well, that even when they are at home, they're not at home because they don't stay at home. They're out doing constituency clinics, or they're going to GA functions, or they're going to funerals.
Mm.
That the life of a TD, and I know they opt into it, they put themselves up for election, they put themselves up for re-election. But the thing that comes across from this is that once they get into Leinster House, it can be utterly boring and banal, and you wonder, why do they put themselves through it?
They often find that they don't have nearly the power or sway that they thought they would. And that's either because they are first-time politicians altogether, people who haven't even had experience in county or city councils, who come in with bucket loads of enthusiasm and they're genuinely impassioned but don't know anything about the procedure or how to channel that. And then you have people who are more lifelong experienced politicians who might have been in their local city or county council for decades and who know how politics works, but have become used to having a certain sway in their council that they don't have when they come up to Leinster House. So you can be a councillor who is used to having votes on the likes of the property tax, which you can either cut and put money back in people's pockets, or you can increase it and increase your own coffers to build better libraries, to have better playgrounds. You're able to call up the city planner or the county planner and say, would you mind, can we stick a new crossing there? You call it the roads unit and say, can we get a zebra crossing? You get this playground fixed, you get this water mains looked at. Small practicable things which never really move heaven and earth, but it's a practicable way to feel like you're making a difference.
I think they make a big difference in the people's communities.
But then they become used to that level of power where you as a councillor can call up a council official and say, can you get this done? And it gets done. And they think the same happens at a national level when you become a national politician, but it doesn't. Because all those officials will only ever pick up the phone to the minister. Otherwise, you are just a random person calling up and saying, here, would you mind setting aside money for that road? Like, that's not how it works. You basically have to lobby the minister to get it done. So they all become fixated with the idea that they're going to have the same level of power nationally as they did locally, find that they don't have nearly as much sway. And one thing I did find is that there's a lot of professional disillusionment where they think they're going to have this bit of sway, and they actually find themselves so underwhelmed by the job that they feel like they're compelled to run a second time and then a third time and then a fourth time, hoping that eventually they become a minister, which a lot of them never get to be.
And I'm interested in your comparison with what goes on in the local councils. It's many years since I was last at a local council meeting, but it does strike me that they were pretty full of life because they're rare. They're only on once a week, maybe. Everyone gets stuck in because everyone's there. By comparison with the Doyle, where you could make an impassioned speech about something that you're really interested in and you really feel needs change, and it could be to a largely empty room.
Yeah. One thing, actually, the funny thing about the empty room is that a lot of passive viewers might see that, you know, they see my news bulletins or RTE's news bulletins, or they see what we used to do in The Tonight Show. They'd see clips of the Doyle Chamber and they'd go, where is everyone? If you expect your TD to be in the Doyle Chamber, unless they've pre-booked a speaking time, they are up to nothing. The Doyle Chamber is almost the least productive place for a TD to be sometimes. Because if you want your TD to be picking up the phone and making calls on behalf of their constituents or getting through correspondence or doing all these other bits and pieces that we expect TDs to do, because we expect them to be something of a Swiss Army knife of public representative where you have to be all things to all people. Unless you are rostered to speak, the Doyle Chamber is a pretty useless place to be because there's nothing you can contribute of note there. And yet, it's such a superficial business that they still roster some of them to sit behind the Taoiseach or sit behind their party leader so that when leaders' questions is happening and you are going to be on television, that they don't cut too much of a visibly isolated figure.
And then why did we spend so much time earlier this year debating speaking rights for various politicians? I mean, in the end, what difference will their words as spoken in the chamber actually make?
Well, it might possibly, because if you are one of the, for argument's sake, you're one of the four or five independent TDs from the outside, or the six as it now is, the outside independents who are supporting the government but who aren't ministers. There is a possibility that you didn't have enough sway, particularly if you're the likes of Matty McGrath, Carol Nolan, who didn't negotiate the programme for government, but you're now a supporter of the government from outside. Well, doesn't your support depend on you being able to tell your constituents, I got this bypass prioritised, or I got this hospital services
or maintained? I made these representations in my speech in the Doyle.
And if that speech didn't happen, even if you made the representations, was anyone there to hear it? You know, in much the same way as so much other parts of life have to now be documented through Instagram, you can make all the representations you like, but if there isn't a video of you in the Doyle Chamber saying it, did it really happen? Which is some of why the row earlier this year was so potent.
But it made no difference to the outcome in relation to the particular event. But the important thing is that you've seen to have been made an effort, and that helps you get re-elected to go through the whole thing that you told us about a few minutes ago. Second, third, fourth efforts.
Yeah, and sometimes you have to do that in order to make it worth your while. And a lot of them make such sacrifices, as we've already mentioned, with their personal lives, and they're away so much and they miss family occasions and they miss kids' functions and school concerts and football matches and whatever, that they feel like in order to vindicate that, that they have to go a second time. And that's some of where the family relationships start to begin to wither on the vine, because you've already reaccommodated your life. You've already moved all the furniture of your existence to try and accommodate this job that you might only ever have once. Well, if you've made that big sacrifice, then you sort of need to vindicate that and go a second time. I did find, as a by the by, there were a lot of TDs who wished they had the gumption that Owen Murphy did in 2021 when he said, you know what, I hate this, I'm out. My constituents deserve better than someone who's sitting there in an empty chair, basically occupying the seat for another couple of years. So I'm going to go. They only wished they had the gumption to do that, but they're petrified that by doing so, they would disrespect all of the volunteers who knocked on doors and handed out pamphlets for them and helped them to get them where they were.
And I think famously George Lee did something the same, and he was less than a year in it before he returned to RT. But at least Owen Murphy had the shot had been minister. How many of the TDs are only using it as a staging post in their ambition to become a minister?
With what they find is that even if they didn't necessarily have ambitions to become ministers, that they all end up harvesting them because it's the only way to get material stuff done. Like, there's a small minority, and actually, funnily enough, Michael Lowry is possibly the best exponent of it, who don't necessarily get elected because they want ministries or that they're not looking to very directly leverage power. They do it because they are very happy being constituency fixers. They know all the people to call. So if you've got this problem with your mother is overweighting a hip replacement, she wants to get prioritised on the list, or some other constituent is awaiting a new passport because the holiday is booked and they didn't realise that it was about to expire. Knowing the right people to call, knowing the people to whom you can make representations, for some people, that's what they get their kick out of, and they're perfectly happy continuing to do that. But for the rest, if you want to impress any positive change upon things, they find that a ministry is the only way to do it, and that's why they end up finding themselves toiling in this slightly joyless scenario for years and years and possibly decades, hoping for the ministerial call that they may or may not ever get.
Okay, I don't want to sound too cynical about it all, because I think an awful lot of the TDs are very committed people, aren't they? Who actually...
Completely. You have to be.
Yeah, and they also go in with a sense of purpose. And I think the majority of them, I know there could be a cynical approach saying they're only in it for the money, they're only in it for the salary and for the expenses and the rest of it.
Mm.
But that actually, most of them take it very, very, very seriously.
Mm, because I think they recognise that the idea of having a mandate and having the endorsement from your peers and your locals and your neighbours that you are the person who is to be their voice in Leinster House, and to have that precious right occasionally of changing the laws that the rest of us have to live by, they do see that as being quite precious. But then it requires you to sink so much of your waking life into it that a lot of other things do get cut. And some people do often admit to becoming a little bit institutionalised, that they end up then not knowing how else to get by in any other life, because you're so used to the unpredictable working hours or everything else that you just can't imagine doing anything.
But there's also a thing, isn't there, about Leinster House, and of course we're talking about your book, The Secret Life of Leinster House, that an awful lot of it is very hidebound, and it's very much you must adhere to the conventions and the rules.
Mm.
And you have a lot of power of the ushers, haven't you, to tell people how they have to behave. And I'm not necessarily talking about the TDs, but the advisors and even the journalists. I mean, there's been talk recently of journalists being told, don't try and stop TDs in the corridors for having conversations.
Yeah, I'm going to choose my words carefully on this one, because as well as being here to plug the book, I'm also, as it happens, the chair of the Oireachtas Press Gallery. So this is actually a matter of live discussion between ourselves and the Oireachtas authorities. There is a lifelong rule around the complex that the only place you can talk to a politician on the record, in other words, to properly interview them, is on the plinth, which is the area in the Kildare Street courtyard where that you see on the news every odd day. So anywhere else that you talk to politicians on the complex by default is off the record. I think, for what it's worth, that a lot of the newer politicians don't realise that. So when there's a big high profile or a high pressurised day, whether it's the row about speaking rights or the delay in the formation of a government, and we're trying to pick TDs' brains looking for a bit of gossip or a bit of insight as to how this might be resolved, some of those new TDs thought that they were literally being cornered on the corridors for an interview, which is not the spirit it was done. But that resulted in them going to the ushers, who are now saying that we can't talk to politicians about politics, which seems to me to negate the point of living and working in the same complex as they are, because otherwise you could just cover it from TV, couldn't you?
But can you stop them and talk to them about something like Tottenham beating Manchester United in the Europa
Thanks.
League final?
We made it 11 minutes before you mentioned that. Thanks. And I used up all my magnanimity for Louth 2 weeks ago, so I can't even bring myself to commend the Spurs supporters for their long time waiting. Allegedly, you can talk to politicians about your kids. And I have known one instance more recently where a senior politician was interrupted by an usher who was saying, "Hope you're not talking about politics." And they said, "Oh, we're talking about our kids. Talking about our kids." Now, but apparently for a while they genuinely were actually talking about their kids before the conversation moved onwards. But that's the level of protocol that exists, that is pervasive across every level of Leinster House, including even at one point I was told the members bar almost had unofficially reserved seating, where if you are a Fine Gael TD, well, you sit over there. The Fianna Fáil TD sit there. Oh, that's Labour seating. That's notionally Sinn Féin.
But do they not mix? I mean, for all of the shouting and the argy-bargy that might go on in the Dáil and the venom at times that is displayed, do you not then get where they actually go in and share a pint together afterwards in the Dáil bar? Or would you know, given that you and others are excluded from entry into it?
Because there are two bars. One of them is the members only bar, so only present and former TDs and senators are actually allowed to cross the threshold. There is a certain amount of pantomime, and there is a famous story about two TDs that were going out to a late night show. I don't know whether it was the earlier version of this night show that we worked on, or whether it was the late debate on RTE, but they were going out together. One was driving themselves and one was in a taxi. They realised they were going the same place, so they drove together. They went out to the studio, they tore strips off each other, they went back into town in the same car again, and they went for a pint together before bed, because they know that a certain amount of it is all...
Well, at least they probably didn't go to bed together.
Well, listen, I don't know what these people get up to in their own times. But a certain amount of it is pantomime, but they also know that a lot of that is just the nature of the beast, and that a certain amount of progressing to the inevitable rank of trying to be a minister is to be the good party figure who takes the invites and goes on to those shows at antisocial hours and sometimes takes a bit of a beating, because sometimes you get the call and that you were rewarded by the party headquarters for your leadership and your willingness to go out and take a bit of a flogging sometimes.
Okay. Is it an environment and sort of insiders, the ultimate insider's environment? Once you get in there, does everybody sort of go into a sort of a bubble? Or do the much maligned constituency clinics actually keep the TDs and their advisors grounded in that they realise that they're there representing others rather than going into a sort of an elite establishment?
I think those clinics do serve a purpose, but I think what's interesting in more recent years, especially post-COVID, is that those clinics are not as universal as they used to be. I think a lot of politicians got into the habit during COVID and immediately afterwards of getting by without them, and their constituents have now adjusted to finding other ways of letting their views be known and not having to have that appointment where you do your Saturday morning in your office or in the local pub or in the coffee shop or whatever it might be. And in a way, maybe they're becoming a tad more insular as a result of that.
Detached.
I think it was very telling that, for example, when the row about speaking rights happened 5 or 6 months ago, and Micheál Martin was saying that all of this was a contrived thing, that this was concocted by the media and nobody was coming up to him complaining about speaking rights, I think he was in a very small minority of people who hadn't had the people coming up to them, because it was a thing which genuinely exercised the public at the time, no matter how tedious it might have seemed. And there was a certain level of ivory tower syndrome where, because it's not a thing that I'm hearing from people on the ground, therefore it mustn't matter. Or second guessing the veracity of emails and texts and social media onslaught that you might get. But actually, the clinics do serve a purpose, and a lot of them are still very assiduous about making sure that they do those clinics, because it is their way of keeping their roots, even when they might be seen as being too busy and preoccupied up above in Dublin.
The Secret Life of Leinster House. What you really need to know about how the country is run is Gavin Riley's new book. Gavin, great to see you again. Thanks, Matt, for joining us.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.